Kevin Cronin from REO is one of my favorite guys to talk to on the planet. REO Speedwagon is performing tonight at Summerfest up in Milwaukee. And if you miss REO there, you can see them on stage with Train at the Credit One Amphitheater on Saturday, July 13th in Tinley Park. And joining us once again is my pal, Kevin Cronin. Happy summer, Kev. How are you, my friend?
Dave, I'm fine. It's always a thrill for me to be on the air in Chicago, my hometown. And, you know, it's just, you know, you grow up, you know, being a little kid playing a guitar and listening to the radio and hearing your favorite records. And, you know, who would have ever thought that I'd be sitting here all these years later? And, I'm on the air in Chicago. This is awesome.
Well, I have to ask you, my first album was yours. My first concert was REO. What was the first concert you ever attended and the first album you ever bought?
Well, the first album I ever got was the Beatles' Rubber Soul, and I didn't exactly buy it. I found it under the Christmas tree. Santa brought it for me on Christmas of 1964, if my memory serves. And the first concert that I ever went to was at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago, and it was Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And it was such an amazing show because it was their first concert.
Wow.
A lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think their first concert was the Woodstock Music Festival, but their first show was at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago. They had Joni Mitchell on the bill, and Neil Young was their special guest, and it was... I was up in the cheap seats, and I did what I see people doing at our shows all the time. Between songs, when the lights went down, I beelined down the aisle and planted myself right in front of the stage and prayed that security wouldn't have me removed, and they didn't. And I watched the whole show up close and personal, and I've been a huge Crosby, Stills, and Nash fan ever since. And actually... the album that you mentioned, Building the Bridge, which will be the album that we'll be, we're actually re-releasing it, and that's the album that we're going to be selling at the concert this year with the proceeds going to Rock to the Rescue. There's a song on that record that I wrote with Stephen Stills, and, you know, he's been my musical hero, and to actually write a song with him that appeared first on a Crosby, Stills, and Nash album, and then REO did it for this album. So it's amazing all the rock and roll dreams of mine that have come true since those days with a transistor radio hidden under my pillow in Chicago growing up.
I love that. Well, how exciting it is, though, to be back on the road again. You got a full schedule this summer.
You know, it's like anything else. If you're in a good mood, you're gonna do your job better. And it's gonna be tough being away from home as much as I will be over this these next 4 months. But if you gotta be away from home, you might as well be with your friends.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to REO Speedwagon's Kevin Cronin. And I was looking, you know, what exactly is an REO Speedwagon? That was a truck company, like a motor company in the early 20th century, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The REO Speedwagon was a flatbed truck that it was actually originally a fire truck that could, you know, get to the fire quicker than a horse-drawn buggy. And, you know, and it was kind of prophetic in a way because they were you know built to last. You know, they were they kind of looked cool. You know, so the name kind of stuck with us. So
yeah, perfect.
Here we are, man. Yeah.
There you
and,
are.
You know, matter of fact, the logo, you know, the famous wing logo that's on all of our T-shirts and everything, that was basically the hood ornament from the original Aria. And can you imagine now? They gave us, you know, they signed off on it, gave us permission. They never charged us anything to, you know, to use the name, to use the logo. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you'd be lawyered up today.
In this world today. Oh yeah.
No. That'd be painful.
They welcome us. Every time we play Lansing, they bring an old Speedwagon out there.
And, wow.
You know, I've ridden around in them, so it's
very cool. Yeah, very cool. And I know, you know, your early days, you know, in the very early days, you were much bigger in some cities like Chicago and specifically St. Louis. You were playing like Busch Stadium one night, But then two nights later, you were playing in a bar in the middle of nowhere. It was kind of all over the board in the very beginning.
It was, but which was kind of cool because, you know, it gave bands a chance to make a name for themselves in locally and then build it from there. Whereas, you know, today's world, everything is pretty interconnected. So I would think it's a little more difficult for a young band to get a foothold now than it was back in those days. But hey, you know, it's the modern world, and you know, we all kind of hearken back to the days that you know when we made it or when we did this or we did that. And you know, the fact is, you know, it's today is today, man. You got to embrace what's going on, and I feel just so fortunate that we're still. People are still buying tickets to come and see
us, of course,
sing and play those songs. And we don't take ourselves seriously at all, but we do take what we do seriously. And we know that people are coming to see us and they want to see something that's not just a bunch of guys resting on what they did in the past. We take the past and make it the present, and you know, we are out there. Our thing is we want to exceed people's expectations every night, and that's somehow we're still able to do it, man. We're still enjoying it, having fun, and
it's fun watching you. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, you talked about a little bit what Minnie Minoso taught you at a young age. And I know when you were touring early, you know, the band wasn't always treated well when you were on the road, depending on who you were touring with. But then you toured with Aerosmith and you said things changed the way you were treated. And it kind of taught you how to treat other bands. And it opened up for you, you know, this level of respect that you had to give, you know, to other people based on what you experienced.
Oh, absolutely! You know, we were the Midwest. We were the perfect opening act for the Midwest because we were really pretty popular, you know, in the Heartland. And so when national touring acts would come to the Midwest, they'd pick up REO, and we would be the special guests on the tour. Mm-hmm. But we were pretty popular. And so some of these bands would see that we were going over really well, and they would basically sabotage us. You know, they'd mess with the sound, you know, turn the lights off on us and stuff, and it was kind of a drag, honestly. But
I don't think so.
But then we toured with Aerosmith, and I'll never forget the first show. Joe Perry walked in the dressing room, introduced himself. They welcomed us into have the after show meal with them and party with them and do the whole thing. And their thing was, I remember Steven Tyler told me that their thing was they wanted us to be as good as possible for the sake of the audience, but it also fired them up that, you know, that we would put the bar at a certain level, and they were so good that they weren't threatened by anybody, but it would inspire them to even play better. And I remember thinking, well, yeah, that's the right, that's
it makes
the
sense.
Right answer there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we always take the Aerosmith route rather than, not to mention any names of the bands who sabotaged us, and I won't, but there were plenty of them.
So all of a sudden you have six albums under your belt. You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. Released in 1978, which, received so much FM radio airplay. 2 million copies, ultimately achieving double platinum status. Was that the album that you finally said, wow, you guys are really on your way?
Well, we felt pretty confident with the songs that we had written for that album. And so many of the albums that we made before that, we kind of felt like the record company would assign us a producer. But the producer never really kind of got what we did. And so the records would come out not sounding like us, and we would, it was really frustrating for a number of years. And so that album, we went in, and you know, Gary and I went into this meeting with the big wigs at Epic Records, and we demanded that either we're going to produce this record or we're not going to go in the studio. You know, we thought we were big shots, right?
Yeah.
And then to our surprise, they were like, okay.
Oh, that's
great. We looked at each other and we were like,
Did that just happen?
Well, what do we do? we're just a couple of rock musicians.
Yeah.
Sure enough, we kind of figured it out. And so, yeah, you can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish was kind of the first record that we all kind of went, all right, yeah, this kind of sounds like us. You know, so it was, and you know, we had Roll with the Changes,
yeah.
Time for Me to Fly. We had some pretty strong material, so it kind of worked.
Oh, I remember Slow Dancing, the Time for Me to Fly at my seventh grade dance in 1979. It was a big night for me, Kevin. Big night.
Oh, really? All right. Well, good. That's the idea, you know?
You broke into the mainstream again with High Infidelity, sold more than 9 million copies, Keep on Loving You, Take It on the Run, Don't Let Them Go. There was a transformation of the band a bit to a little bit more popular music rather than harder rock. Was the band just evolving at the time, or was this more of a conscious effort to head in that direction?
No, we've never had any conscious efforts in the history of our band. Everything that we've done has pretty much been some sort of a happy accident. And,
yeah.
And the High Infidelity record was no exception. I literally, I'll never forget that. I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and wrote Keep on Loving You. And, if you really pay attention to the lyrics. The verses of that song, it's not a real happy song.
No, and people play it like at weddings and stuff, and I'm thinking to myself sometimes, are you really listening? They were prom themes.
Did you listen to the lyrics to the B section of that first verse? But yeah, I mean, you know, but when I played that for the guys, it was like, you know, no, that's not an REO Speedwagon song. And finally, Rich Rath plugged in, you know, a Les Paul to a Marshall stack and got this nasty sound. And I think that his intention was basically to drown me out in the rehearsal hall. But I was like, dude, that's it. That's exactly what this song needed. And so, you know, that's kind of where the you know, we kind of stumbled into something, which is what we always, that's all we ever do. We just kind of stumble our way through, and some, you know, people kind of go, yeah, we dig that. And we're like, all right, cool, we'll do it again.
And your songs are songs of a generation, generations, I should say, that people, you know, they know those lyrics, you know, from the back of their hand, right?
Yeah, I think so. And even if they don't know the lyrics, they sing along anyway. I mean, I know I'm that way. I think I know the lyrics to certain songs that are on. And then when I really think about it, I'm like, wait, these are just lyrics that I made up because I don't really understand what they're saying on the record.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because you're singing along and you know enough of the lyrics that it works. But I'll tell you, sometimes I'll be on stage, and you know, every once in a while, someone in the audience will catch my attention, so I'll kind of focus my singing on them for a second, on individuals that I can see from the stage, and sometimes someone will start out singing along, and then they get to the point where they really don't know what the lyrics are, and it's just an odd moment where I'm looking right at them.
Yeah.
And they don't know the lyrics, and they know that I know that they don't know the lyrics. And it's just it's like, okay, I gotta find somebody else now. You know, our relationship with the audience, it's a very special thing. And I was talking to my good friend, another Chicago boy, Richard Marks, yesterday. We were writing together and just talking about that special bond between, especially the singers. If you're the singer and you're singing your song to people, it's an unbelievable feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm just so grateful that I've been able to experience that and kind of share that vibe with the people that come to see us play. I really do love our audiences. I owe it all to them.
Well, REO is going to be performing at Summerfest tonight up in Milwaukee. And if you miss REO there, you can see them with Train at the Credit One Amphitheater on Saturday, July 13th. In Tinley Park. All right, Kev, always great talking to you, and enjoy the tour this summer.
Thank you, David. Good talking to you, brother.
Take care, sir.
Take care.
All right, we'll talk summer vacations, summer movies, and much more after the news next.